Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We have Tal Ben-Shahar with us today, and he is the author of 6 books on happiness. Plus, he also has courses that you can take on happiness studies. So welcome back, Tal. You actually have a lot of leadership courses and courses where you go in and teach people the basics of happiness and community and connection. How do you go about that?
Yes, so, you know, the basic idea is to introduce people to the field of happiness studies from different perspectives. So, first of all, to look at the latest research from psychology, from organizational studies, from neuroscience, biology, and so on, as well as to look at ancient wisdom, whether it's the wisdom of Confucius and Lao Tzu or Aristotle and Plato. Because, you know, the question of happiness has been on people's mind from time immemorial. And there is a lot out there. The challenge is to bring it all together, to synthesize it, and specifically to synthesize it for the purpose of making a difference in one's life, whether it's in one's organization or in one's family.
And what are we learning with neuroscience backing some of the ancient wisdom now?
So, you know, for example, you know, Aristotle talked about 2 things being most important for a happy life. One is friendship, the second is contemplation. It's interesting that we have research today showing that, yeah, friendship relationships are important, as we discussed, as well as showing that contemplation or learning or curiosity contributes a great deal to happiness, not just to happiness, also to health. You know, these are ideas that were talked about in his academy in ancient Greece. Today we have the neuroscience to back his wisdom up.
So that happiness actually helps our body function better.
Yes. So there's a lot of work illustrating the mind-body connection. Basically, when we're happier, when we're calmer, our immune system is stronger. Optimism has been associated with not just with happiness, also with longevity. When people look at this these ideas, they very often take it to the extreme and say, everything depends on our thoughts, and you know, if we get sick, it's because of what we think, and if we heal, it's because of what we think. That's not true. At the same time, what is true is that our thoughts, that our feelings, our emotional, psychological experience does affect our health to some degree.
And how long does it take to learn happiness and to practice happiness where it becomes natural? Or do you still get up and have to practice to create it? Or does it just flow now?
Yeah, you know, the analogy that I would give is, you know, if a musician or an athlete, you know, the best basketball players in the world, they're the best basketball players because they practice day in and day out. You know, LeBron James doesn't say, well, I've mastered basketball, now I can just reap the fruits. No, he still gets up and goes to the gym and on court. Musicians as well, you know, Yo-Yo Ma practices for hours and hours each day. And it's the same with any skill or ability. Same with happiness. You know, happiness, many people ask me, so Tal, we know you started off at a very unhappy place. That's why you got into this field. But are you happy today? And, you know, 25 years hence. And my answer to that is I don't know how to answer this question, because there isn't a point before which I wasn't happy and then after which I was happy. You know, happiness resides on a continuum. So yes, today I'm happier than I was 25 years ago or 10 years ago, but I certainly hope that 10 years from now I'll be happier than I am today. In other words, it's a journey, and it's a lifelong journey that ends when life ends.
Okay. So Tal, do we need to feel all sorts of other things besides happy to stay happy?
No. Nope. Interestingly, when we look at happiness, there is a seeming paradox at play, because people who wake up in the morning and say to themselves, I'm going to be happy, or happiness is important for me, actually become less happy. In other words, directly pursuing happiness doesn't contribute to happiness. What we need to do is indirectly pursue happiness. What does it mean to indirectly pursue happiness? If I do things that will lead to happiness, if I pursue those things that will lead to happiness, that will contribute to my overall well-being. For example, if I wake up in the morning and say, I want to lead a healthy lifestyle, meaning I'm going to exercise regularly or eat healthfully, that will, of course, contribute to my happiness. Or if I look for things that are meaningful for me, or if I appreciate my life more, if I learn new things, if I explore my interests, that will make me happier. So indirectly pursuing happiness is the path to happiness. You know, the metaphor that I use is, you know, let's say I look at the sunlight directly, that hurts. Mm-hmm. It's actually unhealthy. But if I look at the breakdown of the sun, meaning indirectly at the sun, at the rainbow, I can really enjoy the phenomenon. Same with happiness. We need to pursue it indirectly, the rainbow rather than the sun directly.
And how long would a course be to take one of your courses online on happiness?
So the online course, we have an Introduction to Happiness Studies course, which is 6 months long. And then the full certificate program is a year long. And during that year, you know, it's an investment. It's at least 3-4 hours a week, which includes a lecture and a webinar, and most importantly, you know, exercises, because the course is very much an applied course, targeted at helping individuals become happier and helping them help others, again, whether it's family members or coachee or colleagues at work become happier.
So can we help someone else become happy, or is it just an inside job?
We can help people who are interested in becoming happier. You know, you can introduce people to the ideas. You can, most importantly, lead by example. You can teach, you can tell stories and share research. But ultimately, the person, unless we're talking about little children whom we can certainly directly help become happier. But when it comes to adults, there has to be willingness on the part of the adult.
Mm-hmm. And what is some of your favorite ancient wisdom that you continually bring into your works?
Sorry, I missed the question.
What is some of your favorite ancient wisdom? What are some of your favorite studies that you've brought from ancient wisdom that make a big difference to happiness today in this day and age?
Yes, so there's great work by Lao Tzu, the ancient Chinese philosopher on the Tao, the way. Mm-hmm. And in it, he talks about allowing nature to take its course. Now, there are two ways of reading his work. One is as a leader would read it. Another is as a psychologist would read it. And a psychologist would look at it and say that what Lao Tzu is actually talking about is allowing the emotions to flow through us. One of the biggest mistakes when it comes to happiness is people believing that a happy life excludes unhappiness or excludes painful emotions. Whereas, in many ways, the first step to a happy life is allowing in unhappiness, experiencing and embracing painful emotions when these arise. When we reject painful emotions, they only intensify. When we accept painful emotions, whether it's sadness or anxiety or fear or anger, when we accept and embrace them, they do not remain. They actually dissolve.
So it's good to feel all your feelings and allow the feeling to happen.
It's good, it's important, and it's the precursor to the pleasurable emotions, to happiness.
So it's all in balance. You get to feel everything.
Yes, and again, not by choice. This is simply human nature. And while we have no choice about experiencing painful emotions, we do have a choice about what we do when we experience painful emotions. And if we reject them, they will overstay their welcome.
What's the science of tears? Why do humans actually cry out pain?
Yeah, so there are different hypotheses. There are those who argue that the tears actually have chemicals, that when we let go of these chemicals, we feel better. They change the chemical balance in the body, and we actually feel better. Other than that, it's just the release, whether it's the release of the emotion that comes with the chemicals of the tears or not, but the release contributes to our well-being. Interestingly, so there was research on grief, people losing their loved ones, and there were two groups. One group following the loss said, I'm going to be strong, I'm going to get through it, I'm not going to let this get to me. Whereas the other group broke down and actually cried, shed tears, talked about it, wrote about it, experienced the pain. Fast forward a year later, and even 5 years later, the second group, the group that cried, the group that experienced the emotion fully, was actually doing a lot better.
Wonderful.
Than the group who was strong.
Tal, the work that you do is fascinating. Can you just tell us where to find your website, your books, your work?
Sure. So it's on my website, which is talbenshahar.com. That's talbenshahar.com. And there are links there to my online courses, books, and writings and videos.
Thank you so much for your work creating happiness in the world. It was great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to go to a quick break.